colleagues.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, everyone.
Good morning. Let me take this 9 o'clock now. Let me take this opportunity to acknowledge the Honorable Minister Zuma, the Department of Women, Children and People of Disability, Department of Social Development, to welcome everybody and then to formally open this meeting. Thank you very much. Honorable Christians, welcome. I hope you
can you hear me?
Yes, Honorable Minister, we can hear you. You are audible.
Oh, okay. My unmute button wasn't working. So good morning.
Good morning. Oh, no, thank you very much, Honorable Minister. You are most welcome.
Thank you
very much. The meeting is formally opened. Marcel, can we have slide the agenda?
Yes, Chairperson, I will do so. Chair, I was just wondering if we could give a minute or two for the rest of the members to join. I think we have some members struggling to join the meeting, Chair.
Okay. All right. You will just indicate to me in the next, say, 2 minutes. Just indicate whether we have quorum.
Take away. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And welcome to the members who have just joined. The meeting is formally open. And then we will have our agenda. There we have our agenda, opening and welcome, apologies. Then we have a briefing by the Department of Women, Youth, People with Disabilities, and whereby we welcome the Honorable Minister present in the meeting. Then we'll have deliberations. Then we'll have another briefing by the Department of Social Development. We'll have then deliberations. Then we'll have the consideration and adoption of the committee minutes. And then we'll further have the consideration and adoption of the committee annual report. And then further consideration and adoption of the committee's first term program 2024. We have time frames in terms of the agenda. By 11 o'clock, we will be done with the Department of Women, Children, Youth and Children. Then from 11 o'clock, we will then have the presentation from the Department of Social Development. So our time frame is from now until 1 o'clock. So we'll be sticking to the points, strictly to the presentations. Thank you very much. Members, can we have a proposal for the adoption of the agenda?
Morning, Chair Ndongeni. Propose.
Thank you, Honorable Ndongeni. Seconder?
Christian, second chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Christians. The agenda has been adopted. Okay. Then we will immediately move to the next point, which will be the briefing by the department. I will first give an opportunity to the Honorable Minister to make the opening remarks, and then we then have the presentation. Honorable Minister, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. I will just show my face briefly and then switch off because my network, I'm not sure. But thank you very much for taking time now to deal with this bill, which is a bill that really seeks to establish a statutory body, which is the National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. And we are actually fulfilling our own strategic plan because this was agreed that we must form this body. So this is in line with our strategic plan. So the National Assembly obviously has dealt with it. So we are happy that now we are dealing with it, and I will then, without wasting time, hand over to Nondo Mise, who will be presenting. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Department, welcome.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to start by sharing the presentation. If I could just have a few seconds. Is it visible?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to honorable members. Good morning, Minister, and good morning, colleagues. I am Nondo Mise Ngolunga. I'm the Director of Legal Services in the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, and I'm going to be doing the presentation of the bill as indicated. Okay, the bill is the National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide of year 2023. Okay, in terms of the purpose of this presentation, the purpose of the presentation is to brief the Select Committee on Health and Social Services about the National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide Bill. It is a bill that is tagged Section 75, which means it does not affect provinces in terms of the Constitution. The bill was passed by the National Assembly on 31 October 2023 and was transferred to the National Council of Provinces for concurrence. Hence, we received the invitation to come and brief the committee on same. In terms of the background of the bill seeks to establish a statutory body to be known as the National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, in line with the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide that was approved by the Cabinet during March 2020. The main objective of the Council is to provide strategic leadership and political guidance towards elimination of gender-based violence and femicide in South Africa. According to the NSP, the Council will be legislated and derives its mandate from the Constitution, international and regional instruments, including the CEDAW and the Maputo Protocol, and then Cabinet Instruction of 2012 and the declaration of the Presidential Summit on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide that took place in 2018. The provisions of the bill are as follows. Clause 1 of the bill consists of definitions. And clause 2 provides that the purpose of the bill is, among others, to provide for the establishment of the council as a statutory body, which acts through its board and is responsible for providing strategic leadership on the elimination of gender-based violence and femicide in South Africa, to coordinate a multi-sectoral and an intersectoral approach towards the implementation of the national strategic plan addressing gender-based violence and femicide at national, provincial, and local, and at community and other forums. To affirm a national commitment to building a society that is free from all forms of gender-based violence and femicide. Clause 3 provides that the council is a statutory body responsible for providing strategic leadership and coordination in the prevention and of response to gender-based violence and femicide in South Africa. There is a typo there. And then clause four sets out the objectives of the council, which among others are to coordinate a multi-sectoral approach between relevant stakeholders for the prevention and elimination of and response to gender-based violence, and to set short-term, medium-term, and long-term priorities aligned with the national strategy addressing gender-based violence and femicide, and facilitate the sharing of information and best practices on the prevention and response to gender-based violence and femicide. Clause 5 provides for the development of an action plan for the implementation of the national strategic plan not later than 6 months after the establishment of the council, in order to achieve the purpose of this act. Clauses 6 to 14 provide for the composition of the board and all related matters, including term of office, disqualification from the board, reimbursement of board members, removal from the board, and vacancies in the board. In terms of clause 6, the board shall consist of a maximum of 15 members, of whom 7 must be from civil society structures, 8 representatives from relevant government departments, and the executive officer, who is an ex officio member of the board without voting rights. Then clause 15 provides for the appointment of the chief executive officer, who is an employee of the council and is accountable to the board. The executive officer holds office for a period of 5 years and may be reappointed for one additional term of office not exceeding 5 years, and receives the remuneration, allowances, and other service benefits as the board may determine. Then, in terms of clause 16, the chief executive officer must actively manage the business affairs of the council by, amongst others, obtaining and allocating resources consistent with the strategic objectives, and make timely adjustments in strategies when conditions and circumstances change. In addition, the chief executive officer must carry out a comprehensive budgeting process and monitor the council's performance against the budget. Clause 17 provides that the chief executive officer is the head of the secretariat of the council and must, in consultation with the board, appoint and supervise the staff of the council. The conditions of employment and remuneration of the chief executive officer and the staff of the council are determined by the board in consultation with the minister and the minister of finance. Clause 18 provides for the funds of the council, which consist of monies appropriated by Parliament, donations or contributions received from any source, trust funds vested in it, interest derived from investments, and monies received from any other source. whereas Clause 19 provides that the financial management of the council is the responsibility of the chief executive officer in line with the Public Finance Management Act of 1999. Clause 20 provides that the accounts and balance sheet of the council must be audited in terms of the Public Audit Act of 2004. Clause 21 limits the usage of the name, acronym, logos, designs, and material used or owned by the council to the council unless written authorization is obtained. And then Clause 22 empowers the minister, after consultation with the board, premiers, and mayors in the provincial and local spheres of government, to prescribe norms and standards for the establishment of the provincial and local gender-based violence structures in line with this Act, the Promotion of Access to Justice Act of 2000 and the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act of 2005. And then Clause 23 gives the minister powers to delegate some powers conferred to the minister by this Act and certain duties to the employees of the council, members of the board, and members of any member of a committee of the board. In turn, the board may delegate its powers to the chief financial officer, who can delegate their powers to the employees of the board according to this Act. Clause 24 provides that the minister may, after receiving recommendations from the board, make regulations on matters relating to the implementation of this Act. Clause 25 is the name of the Act and commencement details, which is the short title. And that would be the end of the presentation of the bill. I thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. If I pronounce right, it's Mulune.
Mulunga.
Oh, Mulunga. Okay, thank you, DG. This was very, very straight to the point, very short, brief presentation. Which was most focused on the provision of the bill, which all the clause being explained. I think we'll then have, if there's any further, are there any further inputs from the department?
Yes, Chair. I'm Mikateko Maluleke. I am the Director General in the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. I wanted to inquire whether the presentation was enough, or do you want us to flight the bill itself? Because sometimes it makes it easier when members see the bill itself, and then they are able to ask questions based on the bill itself, not just the presentation. We'll hear from you. I was just asking.
Yeah, no, I think that would assist because the briefing was very short. That saves us a lot of time. So if you can just be given also an overview of the bill, so that members also understand as to the bill itself. Okay, we may continue.
Thank you. Nondumiso. Bongis will be flighting it. Oh, no, you will flight it. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, DG. And thank you, Chairperson.
we can continue.
I'm trying to get to the screen.
Remove the presentation.
The presentation is. Is it visible now?
It's still the presentation. Remove the presentation and slide the act itself, the bill itself.
Is the bill there?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I'm not sure if we would like to go through the definitions.
Yeah, I think I think that maybe to give us maybe the highlight of the bill, those data members must understand as to the context of the bill.
Okay. As indicated earlier, the purpose of the bill is to provide a legislative framework for the establishment of the council as a statutory body which acts through its board and is responsible for providing strategic leadership on the elimination of gender-based violence and femicide, and to coordinate a multi-sectoral and intersectoral approach towards the implementation of the national strategy addressing gender-based violence and femicide at a national, provincial, and local level and at community and other forums, and to give effect to Chapter 1 and 2 of the Constitution, which upholds human dignity, equality, life, security of persons, freedom and the advancement of human rights, as well as non-racialism and non-sexism as its founding principles, and to affirm the national commitment to building a society that is free from all forms of gender-based violence and femicide, to provide for the appointment of the chief executive officer and the secretariat of the board, and to provide for the reporting mechanisms to facilitate the effective performance monitoring, evaluation, and corrective action in the prevention of and response to gender-based violence and femicide in South Africa. And then the establishment of the National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, Clause 3. The Council, this clause seeks to, it's the main clause that establishes the Council. And the Council is a statutory body responsible for providing strategic leadership and coordination in the prevention and response to gender-based violence and femicide in line with the objects contemplated in Section 4 of this Act. The Council acts through its board, and the PFMA applies to the Council. And then objects of the Council are to coordinate a structured multi-sectoral approach between relevant stakeholders for the prevention and elimination of and response to gender-based violence and femicide, to set short-term, medium-term, and long-term priorities aligned with the national strategy addressing gender-based violence and femicide, and to facilitate the sharing of information and best practices on the prevention of and response to gender-based violence and femicide. Then Clause 5 or Section 5 as it is now in the bill is the functions of the Council. In order to achieve the purposes of this Act, the Council must develop an action plan not later than 6 months after its establishment for the implementation of the national strategy addressing gender-based violence and femicide, which must be adequately costed and implemented effectively. Set indicators and timelines to be complied with by all relevant stakeholders, and coordinate the monitoring and evaluation of the implementation of the national strategy addressing gender-based violence and femicide. And then B, it must coordinate measures for education and training concerning the prevention and combating of gender-based violence and femicide. Ensure coordination between all structures established in terms of this act in matters relating to the implementation of the national strategy addressing gender-based violence and femicide. Facilitate strategic partnerships between the council and relevant stakeholders as and when required. In consultation with the minister, facilitate the establishment of intersectoral and multisectoral structures to jointly prevent and respond to gender-based violence and femicide, and to coordinate the prioritization of gender-based violence and femicide programs at national, provincial, and local level, and at community and other forums. The council must advise the minister on any developments relating to the prevention and response to gender-based violence and femicide, relevant international standards to be adhered to, and any matter falling within the purpose of this act. The council must report to the minister at least 4 times a year on its activities, the performance of its functions, and the achievement of its objectives. And the minister must cause such a report to be tabled in Parliament as required, provided that the council may at any time submit any other report if it is deemed necessary by Parliament. The council must review strategic and action plans as identified by the minister every 5 years or as required after the date of commencement of this act. Then Section 6 deals with Board of Council. The board must consist of not more than 15 members, comprising 7 representatives from civil society and the private sector, 1 representative from each of the following organs of state: the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, the Department of Social Development, the Department of Health, the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, the South African Police Services, the Department of Basic Education, and the National Prosecuting Authority, and the Chief Executive Officer, who is an ex officio member of the board without voting rights. So when it says only members of the board referred to in subsection 1A, those are the civil society structures, must be appointed by the president and must, before appointment, be subjected to a security screening as envisaged in Section 2A of the National Strategic Intelligence Act. The president must, whenever it becomes necessary to appoint the members of the board referred to in Subsection 1A, make an appointment from a list of persons recommended by the National Assembly by way of resolution with a supporting vote of a majority of the members of the Assembly. Each member referred to in subsection 1B, that is the government departments, must be nominated by the respective cabinet members responsible for women, youth and persons with disabilities, justice and constitutional development, social development, health, cooperative governance and traditional affairs, police and basic education, and hold a rank that is not lower than that of a deputy director general. Members appointed in terms of this section must be fit and proper persons to hold office, be persons with applicable knowledge and expertise with regards to matters that are related to the purpose of this act, and reflect the demographics and geographical spread of South Africa. The president must designate one of the members as a chairperson and another member as deputy chairperson. The president must ensure that the positions of chairperson and deputy chairperson are held alternately by a person contemplated in subsection 1 and 1A and 1B. Whenever the chairperson is for any reason unavailable, the deputy chairperson must perform the responsibilities and duties of the chairperson. should both the chairperson and deputy chairperson not be available to fulfill their responsibilities, the president may designate one of the members to temporarily act as a chairperson or deputy chairperson for a period not exceeding 6 months. The board, in managing the execution of the functions of the council as contemplated in Section 5, must monitor the implementation of the action plan of the council and exercise general control over the council's power and the execution of the council's functions. The minister may co-opt any person for a period not exceeding 6 months at the request of the board to assist the board with regards to its functions in order to advise and provide the necessary expertise in their specific field or represent a relevant stakeholder. A person co-opted in terms of subsection 9 may take part in the proceedings of the board or its committee, but is not entitled to vote. Section 7 deals with the disqualification from membership of the board. A person is disqualified from being appointed to the board or from remaining a member if such person has been convicted of a gender-based violence and femicide-related offense or any other criminal offense and sentenced to a term of imprisonment without the option of a fine. And then if that person is or becomes insolvent, that's a ground for disqualification, and is or has been declared a competent court to be found to be of unsound mind, is directly or indirectly doing business with the council and fails to declare the interest and the nature thereof in the manner required by this act, is a person under curatorship, has at any time been removed from an office or trust or on account of any form of misconduct, including sexual harassment, corruption, theft, or fraud, or fails to disclose an interest in accordance with Section 8, or attended or participated in the proceedings of the board while having an interest contemplated in Section 8. Those are the grounds for disqualification. Then in terms of declaration of financial or other interests of members, a person who has been nominated, who has been appointed or nominated as a member of the board in terms of Section 6 must, within 10 days after being appointed or nominated, submit a declaration in writing to the minister of all the direct or indirect interest in a company, a non-governmental organization, or any business interest. A member must, at the beginning of every financial year, submit a declaration in writing to the minister of the member's direct or indirect interest in a company, a non-governmental organization, or any other business interest. When a member acquires an interest in a company, a non-governmental organization, or any other business interest, at any time during the tenure as a member, the member must, within 10 days of the date of the acquisition of such an interest, submit a declaration in writing to the minister of such an interest. Failure on the part of the member to disclose the interest as contemplated in subsections 2 and 3 constitutes a ground for disqualification in terms of Section 7 and a justifiable reason for the removal of such member in terms of Section 12. The term of office of the board members, Section 9 says, subject to Sections 11, 12, a member holds office for a period not exceeding 3 years, but is eligible for reappointment for only one additional term not exceeding 3 years, and is also eligible for an extension of office for a period not exceeding 6 months. A member contemplated in Section 6(1)(a) may resign from office by submitting at least 1 month written notice to the president. A member contemplated in Section 6(1)(b) may resign from office by submitting at least 1 month's written notice to the relevant cabinet member, who must inform the minister of the resignation. The names of members and the date of commencement of their term of office must be published by the minister in the Gazette not later than 30 days after appointment to the board. And then reimbursement of board members. A member of the board, a relevant stakeholder co-opted by the minister or a member of any committee of the board may, from the funds of the council for that purpose, in the case of members of the civil society and private sector, be paid a reimbursement and allowance determined by the minister in consultation with the Minister of Finance. And in the case of government employees, be paid any subsistence and other allowances in accordance with such members' conditions of service as the public service regulations may determine. The minister may, in consultation with the Minister of Finance, must determine the applicable payment rate and criteria for the payment contemplated in subsection 1. Then clause 7 deals with the vacancies in board. A vacancy in the board occurs when a member's term of office expired, when a member is disqualified from being appointed to the board or from remaining a member as set out in section 7, when a member dies, when a member's resignation submitted in terms of section 9, 1B and C takes effect, or when a member is removed from office in terms of section 12. If a vacancy occurs on the board, such vacancy must be filled within 6 months as set out in section 6. A vacancy in the council does not affect the validity of the proceedings or decisions of the council. A member appointed or nominated to fill vacancy holds office for the unexpired portion of the term of the member who that member replaces. And then the grounds for removal from office. If the minister is of the opinion that a member of the board referred to in section 6.1a should be removed on grounds set out in section 1b, Roman figure 1 and 4, the minister may request the president and the National Assembly to act in accordance with subsection 1b. The president may, on recommendation of the National Assembly, remove a member referred to in section 6.1a from office on the grounds of misconduct, incapacity, or incompetence, for being absent from 3 consecutive meetings of the board without permission of the board, for engaging in any activity that is reasonably capable of undermining the purpose of this act and the functions of the council, or for failure on the part of the member to disclose any interest contemplated in section 8. The president may, on the recommendation of the National Assembly, suspend a member listed in terms of section 6.1a pending the outcome of subsection 1b. If the minister is of the opinion that a member of the board referred to in section 6.1b should be removed on the grounds set out in section 2b, Roman figure 1 and 4, the minister may request the president to act in accordance with subsection 2b. The president may, on recommendation of the minister, remove a member referred to subsection 6.1b from office on the grounds of misconduct, incapacity, or incompetence, for being absent from 3 consecutive meetings of the board without permission. So here, the conditions are the same for the members of the board who comes from the civil society organization and members of the board that represent government departments. The difference is that on this one, for those who are appointed or nominated from the civil society organizations, it is the National Assembly that is going to make a recommendation for removal, whereas for government officials, it's going to be the minister who makes the recommendations for their removal. But the grounds of removal applies the same or equal to both. The meetings of the board, the first meeting of the board must be held on a date and time and a place determined by the minister, whereafter the date, time and place of all future meetings must be determined by the chairperson. The board must meet at least 4 times a year as determined by the chairperson in terms of subsection 1. The chief executive officer must at any time on request in writing by the chairperson or majority of the members convene a special meeting of the board to be held on a date and a time and a place as the chairperson may determine. The chairperson presides at all meetings of the board. Where the chairperson is absent from a meeting of the board, the deputy chairperson must preside at that meeting. In the event where both the chairperson and the deputy chairperson are absent from the meeting of the board, the members present must elect one member from amongst those present to preside at that meeting. The quorum at any meeting of the board is half of its members plus one. The decision of 50% plus one of the members present at a meeting constitutes decision of the board. And in the event of an equality of votes concerning any matter, the member presiding at the meeting has a casting vote in addition to such members' deliberative vote. The board must determine the procedure for its meetings and ensure that the principles of transparency, openness, respect, integrity, and participation are observed at such meetings. The board may regulate the proceedings at meetings as it considers fit and must cause minutes to be kept of its proceedings. Committees of the board. The board may in writing establish one or more committees, including the Executive Management Committee, the Human Resource and Reimbursement Committee, and the Audit and Risk Committee in accordance with the National Treasury guidelines regarding the formation of audit committees and as provided for in Section 77 of the Public Finance Management Act. A committee established in terms of subsection 1 consists of the number of members of the board or other persons as the board considers necessary. Must perform its duties and exercise its powers subject to this act and such directives as may be issued by the board, and must designate one of the members of the committee as chairperson, and if it considers it necessary to do so, may designate another member of a committee as a deputy chairperson. Then subject to subsection 6, the board may invite persons who are not members of the board to serve on any of its committees for a specific purpose and for the period determined by the committee for the purposes of advising the board, or may make recommendations to the committee in respect of a matter for which the committee has been established. The board may remove a member of a committee or dissolve or reconstitute a committee as it considers necessary. Subject to the directions of the board, a committee may exercise such powers as entrusted by the board to it and must perform such functions of the board as the board may delegate to it and must follow such procedure during such exercising of powers and functions, performance of functions as the board may direct. Upon completion of the functions delegated to it in terms of subsection 5, a committee must submit a written report thereon, including recommendations, if any, for consideration by the board. Any decision taken by the committee established under this section must be ratified by the board. The board is not absolved from responsibility for the performance of any powers, functions, or duties entrusted to any committee in terms of this section. Then clause 15 deals with the appointment of the chief executive officer, who must have qualifications and experience relevant to the functions of the council. The chief executive officer must be a fit and proper person to hold office and have applicable knowledge and expertise with regards to matters that are related to the purpose of this act. The chief executive officer is an employee of the council and is accountable to the board. The chief executive officer holds office for a period of 5 years and may be reappointed for one additional term of office not exceeding 5 years, and serves the board as an ex-official member entitled to remuneration, allowances and other service benefits as the board may determine in consultation with the Minister of Finance and the Minister responsible for public service and administration. The chief executive officer must sign a contract of employment within 10 working days of appointment. The board must conclude a written performance agreement with the chief executive officer within a reasonable time after the appointment of the CEO and thereafter annually within 1 month of the commencement of each financial year. The performance agreement must include measurable performance objectives and targets that must be met and must provide for the time frames within which those performance objectives and targets must be met. Standards and procedures for evaluating performance and intervals for evaluation, and the consequences of substandard performance. Functions of the CEO. The CEO must drive achievement of the purpose of this act in alignment with the national strategy to address gender-based violence and femicide, establish operational arrangements including the establishment of a multi-sectoral and intersectoral technical teams as and when necessary, actively manage the affairs and operations of the council, ensure that the council performs its functions as contemplated in section 5. Subject to the approval of the board, appoint such staff to assist the council in the performance of its functions, administrative and clerical functions. Ensure that strategies of the council are effectively implemented with timely reports towards meeting the strategic objectives. Receive and manage resources consistent with the strategic objectives and make timely adjustment in strategies when conditions and circumstances change. Carry out a comprehensive budgeting process and monitor the council's financial performance against the budget. Submit annual reports, financial statements, and the financial position of the council to the board. Develop a budget in accordance with Section 53 of the PFMA. Establish the financial management and internal control of the council. Ensure the organization and management of administrative control over all members of staff appointed in terms of Section 16E. Attend to the maintenance of discipline and respect of the members of staff and carry out the decisions of the board and is for those purposes accountable to the board and must provide reports to the board as often as may be required by the board. Then Section 17 deals with the Secretariat of Council. Subject to Subsection 4, the board must establish the Secretariat of Council. The Chief Executive Officer is the head of Secretariat and must, in consultation with the board, appoint and supervise the Secretariat. The Secretariat, under the direction of the CEO, is governed by the National Strategy to Address Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, consists of fit and proper persons who possess applicable knowledge and experience as may be necessary to assist the board in the exercise of its powers and the performance of its functions. is responsible for the day-to-day operation of the council and provides technical and administrative support to the board. The board must, in consultation with the Minister of Finance, and the Minister responsible for public service and administration, determine the conditions of employment and remuneration of the Secretariat. The Labour Relations Act of 1995 and the Public Service Act of 1999 are applicable to the conditions of employment contemplated in subsection 4. The funds of the Council in terms of section 18 consist of monies appropriated by Parliament for this purpose, donations or contributions received from any source, trust funds vested in the Council, interest derived from investments, and money received from any other source. Monies appropriated by Parliament for this purpose constitute earmarked funds on the applicable vote and may not be used for any other purpose unless the board has been consulted and the National Treasurer approves such use. Subject to the PFMA, the board is charged with the responsibility of accounting for monies received or paid out for or on account of the administration and functioning of the council and for donations, contributions or gifts in accordance with the National Treasury regulations and may cause the necessary accounting and other related records to be kept, which records must be audited in terms of Section 4, Subsection 3 of the Public Audit Act. The board must utilize the funds to cover costs in connection with the day-to-day operations and administration of the council and the performance of the duties and functions of the council and the exercise of its powers in terms of this act. For the payment of remuneration allowances and subsistence and travelling expenses of the members, the Chief Executive Officer and the Secretariat. Any donations or contributions contemplated in subsection 1B must be utilized in accordance with the conditions, if any, imposed by the donor or contributor concerned, which conditions must not be contrary to purposes of this Act. The CEO must, in compliance with the PFMA and in consultation with the board, open an account in the name of the council with an institution registered as a bank in terms of the Banks Act of 1990 and deposit therein all money received in terms of this section. Financial management in terms of section 19, the CEO must maintain full and proper books of account and all the necessary records in relation thereto to be kept and ensure that the council's annual budget, annual reports and audited financial statements are prepared and submitted in accordance with the PFMA. In a financial year, the CEO must submit to the board for approval adjusted or supplementary statements of the estimated income and expenditure of the council for that financial year. The board must not enter into any financial commitment beyond its approved budget, the prescribed transaction limits without reporting to the minister, and its accumulated reserves. The CEO may, in accordance with the PFMA and with approval of the board, invest any unexpended portion of its fund with the Corporation for Public Deposits established in terms of Section 2 of the Corporation for Public Deposits Act of 1994 or another institution approved by the National Treasury. In terms of Section 20, the accounts and financial statements of the council must be audited in terms of the Public Audit Act of 2004. The board must at any stage furnish such information to the minister, which the minister may require in connection with the activities and financial position of the council, and not later than 31 August of every year submit to the minister an audited annual report and such other particulars as the minister may require. The report contemplated in subsection 2 must include audited accounts and financial statements certified by auditors. State the extent to which the council has achieved or advanced its objects referred to in section 4 and the measurable objectives during the financial year concerned, and contain relevant performance information regarding the economic, efficient and effective application of resources, and specifically a comparison between planned and actual performance indicators. The board may, through the minister, make recommendations to the president regarding legislative and other interventions which have a bearing on the prevention and combating of gender-based violence and femicide. The minister must table the report contemplated in subsection 3 in parliament within 30 days after receipt thereof, if parliament is then in ordinary session, or if parliament is not in ordinary session, within 30 days after commencement of the next ordinary session. Clause 21 deals with the use of the name of the council. It says no person without any prior written authorization of the council may represent or make use of the name, acronym, logos and designs or material used or owned by the council. And then clause 22 deals with the provincial, local and local structures. The minister must, after consultation with the board, premiers and mayors.
Excuse me.
So clause 22 provides that the minister must, after consultation with the board, premiers and mayors, prescribe norms and standards for coordination and accountability of the provincial and local gender-based violence and femicide structures. Consistent with this Act, the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act of 2000 and the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act of 2005. In terms of the delegations, clause 23, it says the minister may delegate to the board any power conferred on the minister by this Act, except the power to make regulations referred to in section 24, or any duty imposed on the minister by this Act, except any duty regarding the appointment and removal from office of members of the board contemplated in section 6 and 12. And then the board may, by special resolution, delegate any power or duty entrusted or delegated to the board by this Act to an employee of the council, a board member, or a committee of the board. The board may, by special resolution, delegate to the chief executive officer any power or duty conferred or imposed on the board by this Act. The chief executive officer may delegate to any member of staff any power or duty conferred or imposed on the chief executive officer by this Act. Any power or duty delegated in terms of subsection 1, 2, or 3 must be exercised or performed subject to such conditions as the person or body that made the delegation considers necessary. A delegation referred to in subsection 1, 2, and 3 must be in writing, does not prohibit the person or body that made the delegation from exercising that power of performing that duty, and may be withdrawn or amended in writing by that person or body. And then in terms of regulations, minister may, after receipt of recommendations of the council, make regulations relating to transaction limits contemplated in Section 19.3(d), norms and standards for coordinating the provincial and local gender-based violence and femicide structures, and any matter which it is necessary or expedient to prescribe for the proper implementation and administration of this Act. And then clause 25 is the short title and commencement of the Act. So basically, this Act is called the National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide Act of 2022 and comes into operation on a date determined by the President, by proclamation in the Gazette. And that would be all. Thank you very much, Chairperson and members.
Thank you very much. Let me use this opportunity to thank the Honorable Minister and the Department for a very, very detailed presentation on the Act, which was then on the provision of the bill, which was dealing with the clauses, and then also the bill itself in terms of the content of the bill. Yeah, we thank you very much for that. Then we will then give an opportunity to the members. We are having Honorable Ndongeni. Honorable Ndongeni, any further hands? Honorable Christians? Any further hands? Jabaleng? Any further? Okay. Let's then for this round, Honorable Ndongeni, followed by Honorable Christians, then followed by Honorable Jabaleng. Honorable Ndongeni.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, DG and the crew. Good morning, the staff of the Select Committee and the Department. My question is on clause 6.1b of the bill indicates that one representative will be drawn from each organ of state, that is Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, Justice and Constitutional Development, Social Development, Basic Education, Health Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, and the South African Police Services. However, the Department of Higher Education and Training, which Institute of Higher Learning falls under, it is not included in the list organ of state. What is the reasons for the exclusion of Department of Higher Education and Training? The second one, how would the department ensure that resources were equitably distributed to non-governmental organizations to ensure a robust response to GBVF? The last one, the department should assume accountability for the allocation of the funds to a non-governmental organization in order to eliminate potential opportunities for corruption. In addition, the department is collaborating with non-governmental organizations and civil society. The question, therefore, is how can the private sector be incorporated into the overall process of the council? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Ndongeni. Honorable Christians?
Thank you, Chairperson. I also just have three questions. My first question, Chairperson, is in light of the concerns that were raised previously about the bill, and that is the composition of the council's board that conflicts with the national strategic plan targets. So So my question is, how does the department plan to address and align the composition to meet the 51% representation from civil society? And then also, how will the department ensure the independence of the board when it comes to decision making in terms of fund allocation and thereby avoiding external influences from donors and contributors? And then also, Chairperson, what strategies does the department have in place to implement and incorporate the private sector in the overall process of the council? Because I think it's very important to get the private sector on board. So what are the plans from the department to ensure that the private sector actively contributes to addressing gender-based violence alongside with governmental and non-governmental entities? And then lastly, Chairperson, with regards to the accountability and the transparency of the allocation of the funds to non-governmental organizations, how will the department deal with that to prevent potential opportunities for corruption, Chairperson? So those are my three questions. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Christians, Honorable Nchabele. Honorable Nchabele. Honorable Dongeni, Honorable Christians are old hands. Honorable Chaplain? Okay, while we still think Honorable Chaplain has a connection challenge, can we then ask the department to respond on the questions of Honorable Dongeni and Honorable Christians?
Thank you very much, Chair. The council was established on the basis of the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence, as Honorable Christian has already indicated. When the bill went to the Portfolio Committee, it had recommended 6 from government departments and 7 from civil society organizations. However, Parliament, as it is the legislator and not bound by what we say, they then decided that they needed more government departments to be involved. Hence, they included Department of Basic Education and the National Public Prosecution and the Department of Health and the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, so that it becomes 8 and 7. So they had to include some of the departments. However, they couldn't include the Department of Higher Education. Hence, they included the section on, or the clause on, co-option. So the minister will co-opt the Department of Higher Education and other government departments that are required, because I don't think it's the Department of Higher Education only that would be required, but they couldn't include all government departments in the board. So hence, the Department of Higher Education was not included, but the Department of Basic Education has been included. And the Department of Cooperative Governance, COCTA, is critical in terms of ensuring that the address of gender-based violence is localized in every municipalities and those. So that's how they included, or how they selected the other departments, and the others, they said they will be co-opted. On the issues of distribution of funds, the bill doesn't provide for the council distributing funds. Currently, the Department of Social Development is the one that is distributing funds, and it does have the funds to distribute. The council may not even have the budget from National Treasury because of the crisis that we have. So the council will use the voted funds. If it receives donor funds, it would be for it to be able to do the work, but not for distribution to civil society. unless it works with civil society and has tasked certain civil society to do the work, then it will remunerate them for the work that they have done. With the private sector, the question by Honorable Christian, the definition of civil society includes a private sector. Civil society, when you go to page 5, civil society includes non-governmental organization, labor, and structures or institutions that represent the interests of citizens in the fields of gender-based violence and femicide. Or the final one, yeah, but it was included. It's non-governmental organizations, labor, and structures and institutions that represent interests of citizens. That includes also the private sector. Thank you. I think these were the questions that were asked.
Thank you. Thank you very much. There's a hand from the department.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just in addition to the DG's response, I just wanted to clarify that the private sector is included in Clause 6.1b with the civil society organization. So they were considered and they were included in the bill as a people who, or as parties that could also participate in the board. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chabale, are you back? Honorable Chabale? Oh. Okay. Any further questions? All right. If the absence of any further questions, what is the way forward? Can the department maybe give us a way forward from here?
Thank you, Chair. We thought the select committee will have to recommend to the N2OP for endorsement before it sent to the president, because the National Assembly has already endorsed it. It has approved it. And then when it goes to the president, the department will start with a regulation in order to facilitate its establishment and the implementation of the act.
In terms of recommending. Okay.
Excuse me, Chairperson. The parliamentary legal advisor has a hand up.
Yes, I. Okay, thank you. Can we get the parliamentary legal advisor?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. Good morning to the minister and all the officials from the department. Let me just formally introduce myself. The name is Adila Arnold, and I am the parliamentary legal advisor for legal services at Parliament. And the committee secretary can also just confirm this is a Section 75 bill, Chair, and with regards to process or the next step in the procedure, the department has briefed us and we would now have to allow for public involvement, and that is publication of the bill, and that would be where we would receive the comments and then thereafter response. And emanating from there could be possible amendments, but
okay. Sorry. Then, any challenge to Arnold? been cut out, kicked out. Okay, we have followed the steps to be taken as advised, that our way forward will be as a Section 75 bill, that we are briefed today by the department, and then the following will be to the bill to be published, and then we'll have response. Marcel, is there anything further than that? On the
Thank you, Chair. No, the legal advisor has pointed us in the right direction, Chair. We've now done our briefing. Our advert will run from today onwards. We are running into the new year, Chair, into the end of January. And with those submissions received, the department will have access to those. There will be a response on those submissions, and then the committee will finalize in the first term of 2024. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, there we are in terms of the way forward. Are there any further questions, any clarities from the members? Honorable Chabelang, you are yet not back. Okay. Then we'll then think we have come to the end of our presentation from the Department of Women, Youth and People with Disabilities. And let me use this opportunity. Anything from the Honorable Minister? Okay.
The Synthesis Minister has been kicked out.
All right. So let me then use this opportunity to thank the Honorable Minister.
No, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here. No.
A last bite, Honorable Minister?
No, I don't have. I think they've presented the bill, and we're waiting for your comments. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. Thank you very much to the department and for the briefing. And we also, in terms of the way forward, that how we gonna process this.
May I be excused? May I be excused at this point?
Yes, yes, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Yes. Thank you very much. The Honorable Minister is being excused, and we will be going to our next presentation.
Sorry, Chairperson. Excuse me, Chair. Our next presentation starts at 11, but if we could perhaps do our household issues in the meantime, if that would be fine.
Yes, we are having 30 minutes, and then we will, which is, okay, the department is excused, the minister is also excused, then we are waiting for the Department of the Social Development, but we will so save our time. The first matter will be, Marcel, which is the next, which is the first matter on our in-house?
We can do our minutes, Chair.
Minutes, okay, let's flight the minutes. Okay, we're having the minutes of the 21st of November.
Yes, are you there?
Yes, I'm there. Can we the last the meeting was adjourned at 4 o'clock. Any clarities from the members on the minutes? Can we get a proposal for the adoption of the minutes?
Ndongeni, Chair.
I support Honorable Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. The minutes are being adopted. Another set, any further minutes?
Okay, we have another set.
Okay. The minutes of the 28th of November.
Mr. Chair, if you could ask Mr. Chabalane to mute. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Chabalane.
Hey, I'm muted. It's not my line.
Okay, thank you. Can move on. Can move on. Okay, this meeting then of the 28th, it ended at 10:25. Any clarities? Can we get a proposal for the adoption of the minutes? Proposal?
Questions proposed, Chairperson?
Thank you, Honorable Christians. Seconder?
Ndongeni second, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ndongeni. That are the minutes of the committee. Can we get the next item? Next item is the draft first term program. Marcel, if you can just give us a synopsis on the program.
I'll do that, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Chair, members, this is just a draft program for the first term of 2024. Currently, there is no framework for 2024 as yet from Parliament, but we are working on proposed dates, Chairperson. So the first term of 2024 is a very short program, Chair.
Honorable Ndongeni.
Hello.
Yo.
Mute and don't mute it yet.
Okay.
Can I proceed, Chair?
Yes, Marcel.
Yes, Chair. As I was saying, the first
term is... Sorry, Chair. Nagu asinkune a comment from your side also. Maybe it's a radio or something.
From my side?
I guess so.
No, it's nothing from my side? Okay, Marcel?
As I was saying, Chair, the first term of 2024 is a short term. It runs from January to March. However, in the first term, they usually have items like the members' training, which starts around about the end of January. But just keep in mind, Chairperson and members, I had said this is estimated dates. We have not received a framework. We have the State of the Nation. That's usually around the first week of February, and then the budget speech just before the end of the February month. There is also always an NCOP strategic planning session, which runs into March. We have programmed in, excuse me, Chair, the next step in the bill, which we consider the written submissions on the bill and where the department will respond to those written submissions, Chair. The answer that has been placed today will run for more than 30 days, Chair, just to give the public enough time to respond to that advert. We have calculated those holiday days, so we've counted them out to extend the number of days, working days, for the advert. I did not stipulate a time on this advert this time, Chair, so the advert will run for the entire day of the 29th of January when the advert closes. We are running on all parliamentary social media outlets, and a media statement will also be released to that effect. And then, Chair, there will be the finalization of that bill, which we're looking at mid-March 2024. And that would be the end of the first term for 2024, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marcel. Can we, any clarities from the members?
Thank you so much.
First 24. Can we get a proposal for the adoption of the program?
I move, Chair.
Thank you.
And I second, Chair.
Second, Honorable Nkosi, thank you very much. That's our first term program. The next item, Marcel.
Yes, Chair. Is it visible?
Yes, it's visible. We have the annual report on the activities of the Select Committee on Health and Social Services. That is the duration of January 2023 to December 2023.
Yes, Chair. Chairperson, yes. If I may, this is the work done for the committee for the period January to December. So it's the entire year's work that the committee has completed. So it's our annual report. So there's an overview. Then there's the membership of the committee members. We then carry on the mandate. This bill that we've done in this year, Chair, which was the fundraising amendment bill. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, Marcel,
Okay.
Yes,
we did the National Health Insurance Bill, Chair. It's just the date that it was referred, the date that the hearings were held, just all of those statistics that relate to the bill in terms of the dates. The next item was if there was any oversight trips, which we did not have. Then it's just the departments that are our portfolios, which is the Department of Women, Social Development, Department of Health and Stats South Africa. Then we have considered the committee's strategic plan, and this happened on the 28th of February 2023 at the Cape Town Lodge in Cape Town. Then there was just a conference we did not have here. There was an international study tour. Our dates are captured, the objectives of the study tour, and the date it was considered in the committee, and as well, dates considered by the House. Then, Chairperson, it's just number 10 is the number of meetings that we've held. We've held meetings from the 14th of March up until today, which is the 1st of December, so just the allocation of the number of meetings we've had, the agenda items we've covered, and whether the minutes have been adopted. All our minutes have been adopted, Chair. This would be the last minute, of course. And then the cancelled meetings and the reason for cancelled meetings, we had NCLP changes, we had when the bill was referred, the NHI bill, we couldn't sit on the 13th because the bill was referred on the 30th. Also, the Eastern Cape had then requested an extension with regards to the fundraising amendment bill. With the meeting of the 24th of October, the Department of Health was not ready with response document to the NHI. And in the 28th, we were supposed to have a briefing by STAT South Africa on the airport. But we've now prioritized the NHI bill for that meeting, Chair. And then also the meeting of the 1st December, we were supposed to have a meeting with SASA. However, we were prioritized gender-based violence bill, Chair. And then further on, there's information on entities that reports to various departments. So social development has quite a few entities, Chair. Then the Department of Health has some entities that reports to it. And the Department of Women has the National Youth Development Agency as well as the Gender Commission. Other than that, Chair, there's papers that have been referred to our committee. Excuse me. The ratification of the treaty for the establishment of the African Medicines Agency. We recently reported on that treaty, Chairperson, and that was considered by the House on the 23rd of November. And today we are doing the protocol to the African Charter and consideration by the House that should be scheduled in the upcoming days after we report on it today. And then, Chair, it's just the support staff names. Yeah. That is it, Chair. Thank you so much. So this is the committee's annual report for the work done for this year, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Marcel. If I follow and I may rate the work of the committee January to December, what rate would you give? 95%, 98%? If we may have an action plan giving us in terms of percentage, even if we don't have it now, but so that we just know in terms of our achievements in terms of percentage. Then I've missed it out, members. Can we get a proposal first for the adoption of the annual report?
I move, Chair.
And I second, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Jabeleng, Honorable Nkosi. Before we go to the next point, in terms of the program, Marcel, I'm just checking. After the NHI bill next year, in the first term or second term, or in terms of time available, maybe what is the possibility for the committee maybe to have an oversight to a hospital? Maybe one of the big hospitals, Paraguana Hospital, or any hospital that the committee may go and just do some oversight. I'm just raising it so that we look in terms of when maybe that you'll be able to do that. Okay, thank you very much. Next item, Marcel.
Chairperson, we are done with our household issues. We have the presentation of the Department of Social Development, but if at 11 o'clock, so if members would like to grab a quick breakfast or a coffee, we have 30 minutes or so, Chair. We've done our part. The meeting will stay open, but if members want to grab a quick coffee, that's up to you, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much.
Are you providing the coffee?
Which restaurant, my friend?
Where is the coffee shop?
Oh, a coffee shop.
Okay, member, can we be back at 5 to 11?
Okay, sir.
Yes, thank you very much. Okay. We are back. We just check the Department of Social Development. Are we here?
Yes, good morning, Chair. We are here from the Department of Social Development. Our minister is trying to log in. She's having a little bit of a challenge, but she's en route to logging in the next few seconds, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Linton. We will then officially start at 11.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Let me use this opportunity. Good day to all the members of the Select Committee of Health and Social Services. Also to welcome the Honorable Minister, the department. We are having an item of a briefing from the Department of Social Development. The department will indicate whether they are ready. We are having time for the presentation and also for questions until up to 1 o'clock. If the department is ready, then we'll hand over to the Honorable Minister. Is the minister locked in? You are welcome, Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister.
I am logged in. I'm connected.
Thank you, Honorable Zulu. You are welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like the department to introduce themselves. I'm here, Minister Lindiwe Zulu, so that the network is not very good. I'm at SASA regional offices here in KZN. So I will switch off my video, but you've seen it's me, not some AI robot. Can the department also introduce themselves, please?
Thank you very much, Minister, and good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Linton Nkuna, I'm the Acting DG of Social Development. I'm joined by my colleagues, Isabella Sikawana, responsible for Welfare Services, and Sivil Lekhodu, responsible for Older Persons Directorate, as well as one or two other colleagues in the department. And we're here ready to present to yourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought they would show their faces, the others.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Minister. That would be good if we can...
Yeah, people must be seen because people don't know who they're talking to. It's not on day-to-day basis that these are people you meet all the time. ADG, you did well. You presented yourself. Can the others do the same unless they've got a network problem?
Yes, here I am, Minister. Good morning. My name is Isabella Sikawana. As DJ has already introduced me, my camera has got a problem, hence I'm coming to ADG's platform. Thanks.
I'll also ask Sivil to introduce herself and show her video. I think she's having connectivity challenges here, but we'll try and get her in as soon as we can. Thank you.
Thank you, DJ. You're welcome.
Okay. Maybe I can just quickly speak so that I don't take too much time. And I wish in my opening remarks to thank you, Chairperson, and the rest of the members who are here for giving us an opportunity. I always take the time to explain, honorable members and honorable chair, that we as the Department of Social Development in our portfolio, which is DSD, SASA, and the NDA, we take the work of portfolio committees and the work of members in general very seriously because we know that members are here representing their constituencies, and when they represent constituencies want to know from yourselves what is happening and what Parliament is doing for them and how you're holding us as the executive accountable and all. So it's always a sense of appreciation and responsibility to say that so that there is that understanding. And also, I always say, Chairperson, we are building a new nation here that needs all of us to put our heads together, be tough on each other where we need to be tough,
but also where we see that we're doing very well, be able to appreciate the work that we all are doing. So in this particular case, we are here dealing with the protocol to the African Charter on Human and People's Rights on the rights of the older persons. And I just want to indicate, Chair, that I know the older person are very unhappy with us this time, because normally by this time we would have had the active aging games and activities that we normally host at NASAL, but we have had to sort of like ask the provinces who can to try and do that, because the budgets, and we're not doing very well with the budgets. We're trying to catch up so that the future may even be better. If we're tying our belts, my grandmother used to say, tie your stomach. We're tying that hopefully for a better future than where we are today. So here, through their adoption in 2016 of a protocol to the African Charter on Human and People's Rights on the rights of the older person in Africa, member states have embraced a set of bold collective commitments to ensure the well-being of older Africans today and tomorrow. And we, as South Africa, we know the steps recently came out to tell us where the older persons are, and tell us the percentage of how many are we, an aging country, are we whatever. And so for me, it's important as the Department of Social Development being responsible for the well-being of our people to really focus on them. And we are very much aware of the challenges that older persons face and their well-being in our communities, in their families. Some are being taken care of, some unfortunately are being terribly abused. I always want to bring whatever we might be talking about from an international perspective and bring it down to ourselves. And therefore, despite progress that the protocols continue to await sufficiently wide ratification to enter into force, while the forcing and realization of concrete national and cross-sectoral plans and programming include resource allocation on aging remains very patchy. A major barrier to progress in the act is the absence of a sufficient strategic fit-for-purpose policy architecture on aging that offers guidance on the priority directions for action on older populations, and that articulates the relevance of such action to Africa's core development agenda and aspirations. Crucially, this limitation also applies to the foremost regional policy framework on aging available at present, that is the AU Policy Framework and Plan of Action on Aging, which is called AUPFPAA. The government of South Africa, through our department, intends to sign and ratify the protocol to the African Charter on Human and People's Rights on the rights of older persons in Africa. The purpose of the protocol, obviously, is to promote and protect the rights of older persons and to guarantee that they are enabled to contribute, participate in their societies and communities. And I indicated earlier on that we know, and you are members who come from your constituencies, you know exactly what the challenges are for the older persons that we are talking about. Adopted in 2002, the plan was the first ever continental framework to highlight and to offer solutions to address challenges and opportunities of aging populations. Since then, almost two decades of social, physical, and economic and environmental change have unfolded in Africa, while scientific understanding of aging and its implications have also evolved. And we, I believe, must use this opportunity also to highlight the plight of our own people, because it's one thing to be ratifying all these international plans, and it's another to have concrete plans on the ground to make older persons to feel they are needed, they are wanted, they are loved within our communities. Chairperson, I don't want to deal with the objectives and all that, because I take it that the department in the presentation will have to do that. All I want to also say that it is the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, and it is in these days that all of us collectively must focus on the challenges that are faced by older persons, and in particular women who end up being abused, who end up being raped, who end up being beaten up, some of whom they end up suffering for the SASSA cards that they have. I mean, there are videos that do the rounds that show how some of the children and the grandchildren abuse them, taking away from them. And so the action that we have, which is the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence against women and children, it also does affect the elderly because they are also the vulnerable group of our society. Also today, it's International AIDS Day, and I'm hoping that some members somewhere in their communities are also going to be doing something. I know that our deputy president should be somewhere in KZN for this program. And I wish to thank you very much for giving us the opportunity and hand over to you so that the department can then start the presentation. And thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Minister. Thank you, Honorable Minister. Thank you. Yeah, welcome, DG. You are welcome, DG. Thank you very much. Thanks to the Honorable Minister.
Can we proceed, Chair?
Yes, you can proceed, Honorable DG. You may proceed, DG.
Thank you very much, Chair. I would request then the Secretariat just to put the presentation up. It's not a long presentation. We can quickly go through it. But maybe just as we come into the presentation, the Minister has given the context around this important protocol. I just wanted to highlight that this is a protocol that we as a department and indeed the country take quite seriously. We have not yet ratified the protocol and we're in the process of doing so. This presentation to yourselves is the portfolio committee, and as you would know, the ratification process has got to be processed also through Parliament. This presentation to yourselves is going to assist us in taking the step forward towards the ratification of this important piece of work. So we are not going to waste a lot of time on it. I'm going to ask, I hope she's managed to get in now, Civil. I know she had a challenge with the connectivity, but both Civil and Isabella will take us through the presentation, Honorable Chair, and then we'll field questions at the end. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Acting DG. I managed to eventually get connected. Let me take this opportunity to thank you and thank the chairperson of the Select Committee on Social Services, and acknowledge the presence of our minister, as well as acknowledge the deputy minister and the leadership of the Department of Social Development. I am going to try, DG, to make sure that I go very quickly through the presentation to allow the members an opportunity to fully engage on the protocol. As the minister has already indicated, the department intends signing this protocol. My presentation is therefore going to be covering the purpose of this presentation. I'm also going to touch very briefly on the structure of the AU, as well as the objectives of the AU, and why do we now have to have a discussion around the protocol, the overview of the protocol itself, also touch on the background of the protocol and the objectives of the protocol, and what is it that we have done as a department in preparing for South Africa's signing and ratification of this important protocol, as DG has just indicated. And I will also touch a bit on why South Africa's ratification of the AU protocol on the rights of older persons remains critical for the country. And just also to indicate upfront that this protocol is going to affect approximately 64 million older persons that South Africa currently has. And also to say, with the intention to ratify, we noted the importance of adopting a progressive stance in dealing with this protocol. What we did, we currently have the Older Persons Amendment Bill of 2022, and because we were busy with amendments of the Principal Act number 13 of 2006, we felt it was necessary as a department that we dealt with this matter in a proactive way. So we have considered the articles within the protocol that impact on our older persons as South Africa, and those considerations are now embedded within the Older Persons Amendment Bill of 2022. So let me move swiftly to indicate the structure of the AU. Just to indicate that the AU was established on the 25th of May back in 1963 as an organization of African unity, and in 2002 it was changed to the African Union, and it consists of five regions, namely the Central Region, the Eastern Region, the Northern Region, and the Southern African Development Communities, which is SADC, which is going to be our central focus because that's where we are impacted upon as a country, as well as now the Western Region. Now, as indicated, we currently have approximately 64.4 million older persons in South Africa. The considerations of the African Union Protocol on the Older Persons African Charter on Human and People's Rights on Older Persons in Africa was considered specifically because of its objectives, which are to create the solidarity between the African countries and Africans, but also to defend the integrity and the independence of its member states, and to encourage and support economic development and political stability through cooperation and member states, but also to ensure the development and approval and facilitation of implementation of policies and legislative frameworks in Africa. Now, we move to a point where we need to indicate why do we have to partake in this process of the signing and ratification of the protocol. We do know that historically human rights and older persons, as a unique separate social group, they have received little attention in terms of the international discourse on human rights. There have always been problems across various countries relating to the respect and upholding of the rights of older persons, which impacted negatively on their dignity and their integrity, but importantly on their protection and them also feeling safe. So this protocol is embedded around making sure that the issues that I've just raised, the protection and the safety and promotion of the rights of older persons and their well-being, that they are fully taken care of. And this reality, I am being disturbed in terms of the, okay, can we move the slide? I've covered that one. Let's move the objectives as well. Sorry about that. Can we move the objectives of the AU up? Hello? Okay. Thank you very much. Now, I was still indicating that now we have noted a lot of changes, including in the African space, the Africa region. The Africa regional space. What is currently happening globally is that older persons, there's a growing number of older persons across all countries. And Africa region is experiencing exactly the same. And South Africa specifically is also having a rising number of older persons. And that is happening across all the provinces. We have recently received the Stats SA's numbers, and it is confirmed that the numbers are growing on an annual basis. Now, this reality is a challenge for the presentation is moving. I'm not sure what is happening. Hello?
Are you
the presentation is moving. I'm not sure what is happening.
I also also see that who is managing or controlling the presentation?
Yeah.
It's okay now.
Can we go to the slide that I was on earlier before this one of the overview? Hello? Okay. Now, historically, like I indicated, we had a situation where there were challenges relating to the upholding of the rights of older persons, and this reality has also began to change in the last decade, which was followed by a series of discussions and articles, as well as activities by various key stakeholders and structures of older persons to contribute to the improvement of the lives of older persons. And back in 2019, the Women's Rights Unit participated in the Africa Regional High-Level Conference on Human Rights of Older Persons in Africa, which was organized by the Stakeholder Group on Aging in Africa. That was held in Nigeria, and the key goal was to engage ECOWAS Parliament and to build consensus amongst the parliamentarians and member states on the need to ratify the Older Persons Protocol for standardized protection of the rights of older persons through a regional and international legally binding instrument, and hence the introduction of the protocol. So the protocol is a transformative legal instrument that provides some norms and standards in ensuring that there is generally across the Africa region some respect and protection of the rights of our older persons in Africa. And in that regard, it serves as a strategic framework for delivering on Africa's goal for inclusive and sustainable development. And therefore, its adoption by the various African countries would ensure that older persons within the Africa region are treated in dignity and respect, but also as equal members of society. Now, South Africa has its own constitution, which serves as a foundation for the transformation agenda of the new democracy to protect the human rights of older persons and to terminate all forms of racial discrimination and inequality that had been instituted against them during the apartheid era. And now the department has also developed a very progressive legislative framework, which is our principal act, the Older Persons Act number 13 of 2006, which the department has recently noted some gaps and facilitated the process of making sure that those gaps were bridged. And as a result, we now have the Older Persons Amendment Bill of 2022, which has just undergone the process of public hearings led by the Portfolio Committee on Social Development. And I need to indicate that it was, in fact, quite for department to note that the gaps that were identified prior to amendment have indeed been acknowledged by the general public as having been responded to effectively. So noting the critical areas of the protocol and their relevance to South Africa have been considered for inclusion in the Older Persons Amendment Bill. And look into the protocol and identify the articles that affected older persons of South Africa and include those in the Amendment Bill so that upon enactment of this Amendment Bill, we sit with a legislation that speaks to the realities that are on the ground currently, the issues that are affecting our older persons, to make sure that all those would have been addressed. And there is an increase in also the number of older persons in Africa, as I've already indicated. Now, what does this imply? As the African region, it says there's need for us to start reconsidering the manner in which we have been dealing with things. It calls for African governments also to institute urgent measures that are aimed at addressing the needs of older persons. Like I indicated, there are growing needs of older persons because older persons' numbers are increasing in the country. The demands for services are growing, as well as to our intervention methodologies and approaches, because the challenges that are currently confronting older persons are no longer the old kind of social ills that we used to have our older persons experience. We know that we recently had COVID, and there are many other challenges that our older persons will be confronted with. Because they live longer, there will be economic challenges, but there will also be environmental challenges, like, you know, what we saw is...
I don't know whether I should proceed or she's not there. Okay. I think she has a connectivity problem. I'm not sure, Chairperson, whether I should take from where she left. But yes. I think I should do
so. Let's do that.
In the interest of time. Yeah. The slide, which is slide number 8, that is reflected here, it's basically taking us through, it's basically in informing us that it is important that all countries should sign and ratify the protocol and ensure that it is domesticated. And we as a country has considered the protocol during the amendments of the Older Persons Act, as several has already said. Can we please move to the next slide, which is slide number 9, Rulani. Now, basically, we are taking the committee through the background. In this slide, we are trying to say that there's a process that has been undertaken, you know, to develop the protocol. But what is important, the protocol is anchored around the three pillars. The first one is older persons, the three pillars that are in the Madrid International Plan of Action on Aging. The first one is about older persons and development, which basically saying that older persons are very critical to contribute towards, you know, the development of the country. The second one is advancing health and well-being of older persons, which basically saying that as we see older persons living longer, we need to ensure that, you know, we also take into consideration the health of older persons and invest into their health and their well-being. And, you know, all the activities that they are doing must be towards ensuring that we advance health and well-being of older persons. The third pillar is about ensuring an enabling and supportive environment. Yes, we have already said that older persons live longer, which is an indication that we are doing something that is right in terms of issues of nutrition and issues of health in the country. And therefore, we need to take into consideration that we put, you know, measures in place to create that enabling and supportive environment. We know that most of our older persons live in communities, and therefore we need to strengthen our community-based and support programs to ensure that we support older persons. The next slide, please. The objectives of the protocol. In terms of the objectives of the protocol, we have listed quite a number of the objectives, and we are saying that most critically, or just to outline only few, it's about eliminating all forms of discrimination against older persons. This thing of saying that older persons must be there and wait, you know, for their time to come and die, it should really be dealt with. It's a form of discrimination, and we need to ensure that older persons are people and they've got rights, and their rights need to be respected, and therefore we need to treat them as such. The second one that is also critical is about maintaining and protecting the rights of older persons. Next slide, please, about the consultation process. The next slide, please. Yeah, here we are saying that the consultation to the protocol has been made, especially in the country. We consulted with the Office of the Chief of State Law Advisor. We consulted with DERCO. We also consulted with older persons sector, including the beneficiaries at different levels. The next slide, please, which is slide number 12. Now, we are saying, why should we as a country ratify the protocol? There's a need for us as a country to ratify protocol simply because we need to strengthen the protection of the rights of older persons. And this is also in line with our constitution, because our constitution is about, it's rights-based. It says older persons' rights are also human rights-based. The second one that we can table is about promoting integrated efforts in policy and program development, implementation, monitoring, and evaluation. To say that all the efforts that we are doing as a country, should be done in an integrated, coordinated, and collaborative manner. Next slide, please. Which is slide number 13. This might still also, motivate why we should also ratify as a country. I would love us to look at slide number 14, which basically, slide number 14, please. I think Civil has mentioned that we have taken into consideration the AU protocol when we amend when we amend Older Persons Act, which is currently a bill and is being consulted, is going through parliamentary processes. There are public hearings that are being held. And both slide numbers 14 to 18, it basically outlines those areas or sections that we have taken from the protocol. So in slide number 14, it basically talks about what is it that has been taken into consideration with respect to Chapter 1, which basically outlines the necessary measures to eliminate harmful traditional practice, including witchcraft accusations. We know this is a big problem, especially in provinces such as Limpopo and Eastern Cape, where older persons are being killed because they are regarded as witches. So the current amendments have taken into consideration this issue, and it has been addressed. Next slide, please, which is slide number 15. This slide basically tells us about what is it that we have included in the current amendment bill, the chapter 2 of the current amendment bill, which we have been able to insert the responsibilities of older persons, which is in line with Article 20 of the AU protocol. We are saying that older persons have got rights, but older persons also have got a responsibility, to also participate in the economy of the country. But we also are quite aware that most of the older persons are heading, the family, and they are also taking care of their grandchildren. So this has taken into consideration that. Next slide, please, which is slide number 16. In slide number 16, we're dealing with chapter 2 and chapter 3 of the current amendment bill. And the insertion that we have made, especially in chapter 2, is about older persons' rights to property. And this is in line with article number 9. But in chapter 3, we inserted, information and non-communicable, information on non-communicable chronic diseases. So we have put that in, which is also in line with the AU protocol. Next slide, please. In this slide, which is basically almost the one but last slide, we have looked into chapter 5 and chapter 5 of the Older Persons Act, where we specifically inserted, we included services to older persons with disabilities and chronic illnesses, and that is in line with article number 13. But we also looked into including social workers, police officials, and managers in investigating elder abuse cases, and time frame of 48 hours to investigate elder abuse cases. It is very much important that we should really put the time frames in terms of how soon can can social workers or social service professions respond, to the issues or the elder abuse for older persons. I think, Chairperson, that is all in the next slide. We are just making a recommendation. Okay, it still continues in terms of what we have inserted with regard to older persons with disabilities. Yes, I think it's the same slide that has been repeated. I want to apologize for that. So the last slide, we recommend that. Can you move to the next slide, please? Yes, we're just saying that it should be noted that
SA Constitution has laid a firm foundation for the transformation agenda of the new democracy to protect human rights of older persons and to terminate all the forms of racial discrimination and inequality that had been instituted against them during the apartheid era. And we are saying that you should know that the National Department of Social Development has developed a very progressive legislation for older persons, which is the principal legislation in the delivery of services to older persons. Older Persons Act number 13 of 2008, and we are currently amending that act, which we have considered the AU protocol issues that we have incorporated in that. And we are also saying we request the minister to present the protocol to cabinet to approve for signing and ratification so that implementation can be enforced and facilitate that each department develops the following costed implementation plan to the protocol with the timeline, a standard monitoring and reporting template, and that DPME supports the National Department of Social Development to facilitate the monitoring and evaluation across various levels of implementation processes. We are taking into consideration that it is a multifaceted issue and it should be addressed in an intersectoral manner. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. To the department, Honorable Minister, for a very comprehensive report. Members, there we have the presentation from the Department of Social Development on the protection of elderly people. I will then open now for questions of clarity and inputs from the members. I've got Honorable Christians. Honorable Christian.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I go ahead?
Just one moment, Honorable Christians. Let me just check for any further hands. Are there any further hands? Okay, Honorable Christians, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't have many questions. And thank you to the department. I think the protocol and amendments and the view towards older people are most welcome, considering that they are amongst the most vulnerable people in our society and country. And I think it's welcoming that we are looking towards improving services for them. I have a few questions, Chairperson, that I was wondering if that is included in the protocol, if the department can just highlight that for us. My first question is just about old age homes in general across the country. Now, recently, you know, when I visit my constituency and when I visit other areas, there is a concerning trend in old age homes that they seem to be disintegrating, that they seem to be sort of a lack of funding going towards old age homes. And you can see the deterioration in the facilities and the care towards the people in these homes. And my question to the department is, does the protocol improve? Does the protocol also, you know, have a bird's eye view as to how they are going to improve these provisions to address these issues? And included in that, the older people have also voiced their dissatisfaction regarding service centers, for example, physical activities, which I think is very important. They've also mentioned things like issues with food, equipment, etc. And I've also seen for myself that there has been issues with regard to general care, for example, nurses and other care within the homes. So what kind of provisions are made in the protocol to improve on that? And then I think a big concern also is that the human rights Watch reported that there was a failure to provide basic care services. Now, I see there's a grant aid or a home-based care aid given to or provided to older people. And if I'm not mistaken, it was 500 rand. Now, my question is, does the department think that is enough to cover the actual costs of caring for an older person? I think that was 500 rand per month. So that seems to me to be quite a little bit of money, especially if someone is bedridden, etc. So how will the department deal with that? And then the speaker also mentioned that the protocol aims to eliminate harmful social and cultural practices, especially with regard to the welfare of older women, such as witchcraft, etc. And I think that's very important and it's very welcoming, and I'm very glad to see that that's on the table. So my only question there is, what kind of awareness programs will then go together with this protocol? How will the department then address that to prevent such practices? Thank you, Chairperson. That's all from me.
Thank you, Honourable Christians. Are there any further hands? Okay. Can we then have a response from the department?
Thank you, Chairperson, and let me appreciate Honourable Member for the questions that have been raised. They are much appreciated and welcomed. I just want to talk to the issue of whether the protocol has taken into consideration the dissatisfaction on the service centres with regard to food, equipment, general care in the home. Basically, when we talk about care protection and promotion of the rights, we include all the rights, and we want to believe that there's a right to food. It's a human right, you know, and that is why, as the Department of Social Development, we are funding, you know, these service centers, but we acknowledge the fact that, you know, funding might not be enough, and we are continuously ensuring that we have the conversations with a National Treasury, you know, to ensure that we improve on funding, because the funding that we are providing at the moment is just not enough to cater for all the needs of that particular, of the service that needs to be rendered, especially that we've got the norms and standards in terms of, you know, how the services must be rendered. But we are most of the time, you know, informed by what is currently available. So we continuously, you know, knock on the National Treasury's door to ensure that we get more funding, you know, to improve on the services of older persons. The Older Persons Act advocates that older persons must remain in communities for as long as possible. And hence, you know, in addition to issues of funding or food and equipment, you know, there are, you know, active aging programs, you know, that are being implemented in different service centers. The active aging program is not just an event, but it's an activity that is basically within the service centers. And, you know, as older persons go, they are able, you know, to improve also on their well-being, you know, by exercising and by ensuring that, you know, they socialize and also improve on the life skills, you know, when they are there. It's not only about socialization. But I'm saying that we go beyond the issues of food, otherwise we acknowledge that the funding is not enough. We are really trying on a daily basis to ensure that, you know, we engage National Treasury to improve on that. As to whether the issue of the, I want to believe that the member is talking about, when you talk about home-based care, you're talking about the grant in aid, you know, that is being provided to older persons in addition to their old age pension. We are saying that, you know, the older persons are getting their old age grant Of course, it caters for their needs. And the grant in aid is there to ensure that, you know, those older persons who need 24-hour care are being, you know, provided for. Of course, it cannot be enough, but at least there is something that is on the table that is being provided. And I'm sure members are quite aware that, you know, Minister is on a continuous basis advocating that, you know, there should be increase, you know, in terms of the grants that are being provided. But however, we know that, you know, in the fiscal space that we are operating in, there is competition and our fiscal space is also constrained. But we agree that it is not enough, but we are saying that at least something is being provided, and should we have more resources, we can be able, you know, to increase on that, especially that there are also competing needs in terms of that. The issue of harmful cultural practices, of course, as the department, we did not wait for AU protocol. We are on a continuous basis ensuring that we create awareness, especially in those provinces where we know that this problem is prevalent. And since we started with our awareness, this harmful practice on witchcraft has decreased tremendously because we have started, you know, people have started to be conscious about, you know, conditions such as Alzheimer and dementia that, you know, compromise older persons. The people did not understand what dementia is all about. They thought that, you know, the manner in which older persons are acting is because they are witches. But we have since been able to create awareness, and this practice is decreased. Of course, we'll continue with our awareness and make sure that, you know, this is completely eliminated. Hence, we've been able to put in our legislation to ensure that it is reinforced, and we work together with other government departments. Also, we are working together with traditional leaders because they are the ones who are in the communities and they are, you know, influential, and their voice can also be heard, but also they can also be educated to be able, you know, to empower the communities that they are in terms of ensuring that, you know, this practice is being eliminated at all. On the issue of this included housing, this integrating, okay, is the funding. Yeah, I think I've tried to respond to all the questions. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Can we check for a further questions? Any further questions? Okay. In the absence of any further questions, Honorable Minister, I'll give to the Honorable Minister to make closing remarks from the department. Marcel, the Honorable Minister, is still here? From the department, EG, anything else? Way forward?
Okay, it looks like the Minister maybe has connection problems. And also DG, I think this has kicked him out. I can't see her. Him here. I think from the department, we have tried our level best to respond to the questions, and therefore we will hand over to the honorable member, you know, to make a decision in terms of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay, Marcel, can we, in terms of the way forward?
Yes, Chairperson, we should adopt the report on the protocol. I'll flag the report, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much.
Chair, I'm not sure if you want to read the entire report. I'm sure members are able to read it. If you want, I can just go through the background and the purpose, or you can do that, Chair, and then...
In terms of the background of the report, the government of the Republic of South Africa is one of the, that doesn't stop it there, one of the African Union EU member states that adopted the protocol to the African Charter on Human and People's Rights, on the rights of older persons in Africa on 31st January 2016. This took place at the 26th ordinary session of the AU Assembly of Heads of States and Governments in Addis Ababa. I think it's for this report and also the purpose of the report, the protocols transformative legal instrument providing norms and standards in ensuring respect and protection of the rights of older people in Africa. The purpose of the protocol is to promote and protect the rights of older persons in the guarantee that older persons are unable to contribute and participate in society. So in terms of a nutshell, that is the report, and then parliament process, the ratification for the protocol was tabled in parliament on the 26th of October 2023, and referred to the committee on the 8th of November 2023. The committee received a briefing on the protocol from the Department of Social Development on the 1st of December 2023. The committee recommends that the House, in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa 1996, approve this protocol. Okay, can we then get a proposal for the adoption of this report? Can you get a proposal for the adoption? Thank you, was the seconder. A seconder to the proposal?
Christians, Chairperson.
Honorable Christians. Thank you very much. The committee has adopted this report. I think, Marcel, now we have come to the end.
Yes, Chairperson, we have come to the end.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Let me first take this opportunity to thank the Honorable Minister and also the department for the briefing presentation, and also the members attending this meeting, support staff, and to thank everyone for a fruitful meeting, and then to that bring us to the end of this meeting, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a note, this is the last meeting. If we have maybe indicated to members that this is the last meeting for the year.
Yeah, thank you, Marcel. I think that is very important. I think as a committee, let me formally close this meeting. Just to, if any member has got anything to say that we have come to the end of the 2023, and this is our last meeting. Any closing remarks, any comments from members, meaning that we'll be seeing each other next year now. Any members, anything to say for wishes for?
Yes, Chairperson, just be safe, everyone.
Yeah. I give you official official domestic, Honorable Christian.
Thanks, Chairperson. No, I just want to wish everyone well and be safe. Be safe on the roads and enjoy the Christmas time with your family, and everyone come back safely. Hard work waiting for us next year. So, yes, that's all from me. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Christians. Honorable Dongeni.
Chair?
Any wishes?
Oh, okay. I wish everybody a safe journey, safe Christmas, safe New Year. It was nice to be with you along the year. I wish even the next year will be. Thank you very much for everybody. Whether we don't agree on other things, but at the end, we have that thing. Well, we are a family at the end. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dongeni. Honorable Chaplain. Honorable Chaplain. Honorable Baha. Honorable Healy.
Yes, sir.
Honorable Chaplain, wishes.
Oh. Sir.
Do you have any wishes for the members?
Yes, oh, yeah. Yes, sir. Nothing. It was a very, very hectic year. And particularly towards the end. And I wish everybody should take this period to rest, to take enough rest and get enough energy for next year. Keep safe. Enjoy the festive season.
But, thank you. Are you done, Honorable Chaplain?
So long.
Are you done?
Yes, I'm done.
Thank you very much. Honorable Baha? Honorable Nkosi?
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chaplain. Greetings to yourself, all members present and the support staff. Honorable Chair, let me take this opportunity to thank all the members of the Select Committee for being committing themselves since we have started. I saw them, they are very much, very much, very much committed in what they are doing, especially by putting our work first, the priority that they are making in most of the cases, they are prioritizing this committee. So I just want to say to them, let us keep on working together. Let us keep on supporting one another. Of course, when we are working, there will be ups and downs. But as long as we are working towards a goal that we want to achieve for making the NCOP proud of us as this member of the Select Committee, I would like to say to them, as we are going to holidays, let them have enough time to spend with their families. Remember that most of the time we are at work. So now is the time for us to make sure that we please our families, we stay with our families, we enjoy with our families. Thank you so much for everything that you have done for this committee and the support staff. I wish you all the best in your holidays, a happy Christmas and a prosperous New Year till we meet again next year. Thank you very, very much. For those that are going to travel for the holidays, please travel safe. Please take good care of you and yourself. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nkosi. Honorable Baha, not yet. Thank you very much. Let me also use this opportunity. I think this was a good and a fruitful year for the Committee of Health and Social Development. And I want to use this opportunity to thank the members understanding that we are members of parliament and we are here for service delivery, all of us. We will not agree on everything because we are here to make sure that democracy prevails and we serve the community with the best of our ability. And that's why we are here as members of parliament. We are here in this committee to make sure that the work of this committee is a success. I want to use also this opportunity to thank the support staff, the secretariat, the content advisor, the legal advisor. Without the administration, this committee work will not be possible.
And the researcher.
And the researcher, yeah. Thank you to remind the researcher. If there's anyone that I've left out, remind me. I don't want to leave anyone out. Because here we have worked as a team. And this team will make the work of this committee to be a success. And also for the Christmas time, to enjoy your time at your best with your families, and also a prosperous new year 2024. We are looking forward for the best in 2024. So in those words, to thank you everyone, to say thank you, thank you, thank you very, very much. And this meeting is now formally adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, members. So welcome, Sally.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Love you. Love you, my members.
We love you too.
Thank you. Bye, everyone. Enjoy.
We're going to see you next week.
All right,
yeah, we're going to see
one another next week,
yay. Yes, thank you, yay. All right, thank you.